That old saying, tell me what you eat and I'll tell you who you are? Well, that's true, but how about historian Paul Friedman's take? Show me your restaurants and I'll show you what's shaping your community. Take New York City in the 1830s. A new country, lots of new money, the era of more is more, as in the palatial restaurant Delmonico's, where as the maitre d' seats you, he tucks a silk pillow at your back. The pillow is embroidered with your initials. Then he hands you the menu. It's printed in gold leaf on satin. Well, this is how Paul Friedman, the Yale historian, opens his story of 10 restaurants that changed America. Paul, good to have you back.
I'm delighted to be with you again.
So, 10 restaurants. Which ones did you choose?
So, in the order of the chapters that I devoted to them, and it's roughly chronological, Delmonico's is the first, a restaurant in New York that really defined elegant cuisine, French cuisine, but also with American specialties from its foundation in the 1830s until Prohibition closed it in the 1920s. Then Antoine's in New Orleans, a durable example of the most vibrant regional cuisine of the United States, the cuisine of Louisiana, of course. Then Schraft's, which was a middle-class restaurant, a restaurant that served ice cream, sandwiches, salads, but which was particularly appealing to women, not only as a place that women who were shopping or who worked in offices or stores might like, this at the beginning of the 20th century, but also served food that it was thought that women liked, basically light entrees and very rich desserts. So then Howard Johnson's, which was, like Schraft's, a kind of safe and in this case more family-friendly place for families with children, roadside restaurant, coast to coast. At its height in the early 1960s, more meals were served by Howard Johnson's than by anything except the U.S. Army. And then Mama Leone's, an Italian restaurant. So it's an example of one of the most popular so-called ethnic or international or foreign foods. The Mandarin, which is the example of Chinese food, the most popular foreign food of the United States. Sylvia's, an African-American restaurant that exemplifies the importance of African-American innovation and cuisine on American cuisine as a whole. Le Pavillon, which was a French restaurant and that defined elegant cuisine, high-end cuisine from 1941 when it was founded until the mid-1960s. The Four Seasons, founded in 1959, sleek, modern, very elegant, but deliberately not French, a place that defined seasonality and also pioneered the so-called power lunch, the business lunch of a certain kind of status and deal-making. And the last one, Chez Panisse in Berkeley, Alice Waters' creation, a restaurant that really moved from French to a kind of new American cuisine that emphasized seasons, quality of ingredients, locality, and without Chez Panisse, the way we dine out now would be inconceivable.
Why no McDonald's?
Well, partly because fast food restaurants aren't really restaurants in the sense that they don't have a very wide menu choice. There are no waiters. There are no menus except posted sort of above the order window. So it's not exactly a restaurant. It's closer to takeout. The other reason is that Howard Johnson stands in for all fast food. It's the first franchised restaurant. It's the first rigorously standardized restaurant. It's family friendly, and it was also located on highways. So you would look for this brand and know what to expect.
Yeah. Had orange roofs. You couldn't miss them.
Right. And that was deliberate because Howard Deering Johnson, the founder, didn't believe in billboards, which were common in the 20s and 30s, and thought they were tacky. But in order for people to recognize the restaurant going 60 miles an hour with sufficient distance to make up their minds and stop, it had to have the orange roof.
Uh-huh. Delmonico's. You refer to it as the first real restaurant in the United States. When did it begin?
It began around 1830. It had been a pastry shop founded in 1827 and very quickly turned into a restaurant. It was the first restaurant in the sense that it was elegant, it had refined service, it emphasized the quality of ingredients. It was not relentlessly French, but it was basically a French restaurant. It described itself as the Restaurant Français Delmonico. So there had been sort of taverns with food, chop houses, places to have lunch, hotel dining rooms, but they tended to be necessities, places to dine quickly, eat a lot of food, and get out. This was something new and something different and immediately acclaimed as such. Everybody throughout the entire 19th century considered Delmonico's the leading restaurant of the United States.
Uh-huh. Well, the other restaurant that I'd love to talk to you about is also in New York. It's Sylvia's, and it's in Harlem. This was a restaurant that welcomed everyone. It was a restaurant serving what people thought of as soul food. But white New Yorkers didn't go there.
Well, white New Yorkers had gone to Harlem as an entertainment district in the 20s, particularly, and in the 30s. But by the time Sylvia's opened in 1962, Harlem was on its way to being isolated from white New York. And although people from Harlem traveled all over New York and weren't themselves isolated, white New Yorkers tended not to come to Harlem out of fear of crime or just out of a sense that there was nothing there.
And then Gail Green, restaurant reviewer for New York Magazine and now other publications, did a review of Sylvia's. Tell us about that.
Yes. Well, she did a review of Sylvia's for New York Magazine. And it's an amazing review because it really shows you this isolation that I was referring to. And this is in 1979 in one issue of New York Magazine. Actually, her editor expressed some doubts about the wisdom of advising the white readership, or at least primarily or assumed to be white readership of New York, to go up to Harlem. You know, aren't we recommending that they do something dangerous if we write a review of a restaurant in Harlem? And she says she sort of agreed, but she went anyway. She had trouble getting a taxi to take her to Harlem. She was, her review reads as if she was on some kind of exciting but dangerous expedition to an unknown territory. And then she was amazed and delighted by the welcome that Sylvia Woods, the proprietor, gave to her. Sylvia hugged her. She thought the food was great, although she had some reservations about some things. She loved the ribs and the fried chicken, but wasn't all that impressed by the cornbread, for example, which she said was wishy-washy. But she was just amazed at what a good time she had. She was amazed at how good the food was. She was amazed at the welcome that she had. And it gives you a sense, you know, not that life is so great now in every respect, but it gives you a picture of a New York that's not that long ago, but sociologically and culturally very different.
Well, Paul, there's 8 other restaurants to dig into. We need a couple of hours, but thanks so much for talking with us.
Thank you for having me. It's been great.
Paul Friedman's author of 10 Restaurants That Changed America. He is the Chester D. Tripp Professor of History at Yale University. Now, don't miss out on one of the 10 recipes that changed America. None other than my first gourmet addiction, Howard Johnson's fried clams. And you can find it at splendidtable.org.